Welcome to the Red Zone.
The Red Zone. Red Zone.
With Soren Petro. An exclusive presentation of KCChiefs.com. For the next 60 minutes, this is your in-depth, inside look at the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, here's your host, Soren Petro.
And good afternoon and welcome. You're in the Red Zone here at KCChiefs.com. Soren Petro with you on a Wednesday, a victory Wednesday. Always a lot better here in the Red Zone when the Chiefs are coming off a win. Wasn't pretty, but it was effective. 10-6 over the Denver Broncos. I don't know if it was revenge. It certainly evens the regular season record against the Broncos. Not the kind of beatdown that the Chiefs took in Denver, but it is a win that unfortunately, I don't care what anyone says. I never like to see somebody lose their job, but a win for the Chiefs and a loss for the Broncos that ended up costing the head coach of the Denver Broncos, or at least being the final domino to fall in Josh McDaniels being let go as the head coach of the Denver Broncos. Denver wins the point differential. The Chiefs split the season series with the two teams, and this win vaults the Chiefs into a two-game lead, sole possession of the AFC West. First place in the AFC West, which they had already, but now a margin of two full games. The win wasn't pretty. It didn't necessarily equal the win that Denver had, but it was very effective at giving the Chiefs a great chance to get to the postseason. By the way, if you're a season ticket holder of the Kansas City Chiefs, those playoff tickets, the forms, everything you need to know is on its way to you right now. Of course, you can find out all that information you need right here at kcchiefs.com. Just click on tickets and you get all the information you need. Plus, in addition to that, playoff tickets, how that money will be used if it ends up rolling into your season ticket renewals. Information coming from, by the way, a little thing before we get to the football side of things, talking to Mark Donovan yesterday on my radio show. Mark Donovan, the chief operating officer of the Kansas City Chiefs, pointing out a couple of things. One, right around half, maybe a little more, but we'll say half the stadium when it comes to playoffs, whether you're a season ticket holder or after the season ticket holders get their chance to buy playoff tickets, those of you when they go on sale to the general public, half the stadium is under $100 with playoff tickets in the 30s, the lowest, cheapest ticket. Get a playoff ticket at Arrowhead Stadium in the 30s. I don't think you can beat that with a bat, and half the stadium going to be under $100. So look for those playoff tickets very soon. If you're a season ticket holder, those forms will be coming. If you're not a season ticket holder, just look here at the website and keep your head on a swivel as those tickets will be made available to the general public after the season ticket holders get their chance. Also in the renewals, one thing that's of note, two-thirds of the tickets for next year will either stay the same in price or go down. One-third will go up, but two-thirds of the stadium is going to either stay the same or go down for tickets for next year. I think in the midst of an 8-4 year, a year that looks like it's going to be an AFC West championship year, not bad. I don't think you can complain. The Chiefs tickets headed out. Season ticket holders getting all the information they need here very soon. So if you're a season ticket holder, look for that in the mail very soon. Let's talk about the Chiefs beating the Denver Broncos 10-6. As I said, not very pretty. We'll talk about the San Diego Charger game coming up here in our next segment. Todd Villalobos, KFMB-TV in San Diego, will be here to tell us about the Chargers, who, of course, fell to the Oakland Raiders. Not pretty. The Raiders taking out the Chargers 28-13 and knocking the Chargers two full games back. We'll get the vibe from San Diego. Todd Villalobos coming up next in the Red Zone. And then in our a little bit later on, Leonard Pope scheduled to join us. Chiefs tight end will join us. We'll talk playoffs with Leonard Pope. We'll talk touchdown with Leonard Pope, as he had the only touchdown in the game against the Denver Broncos, the 10-6 win, giving the Chiefs a two full game cushion in the AFC West. Let's talk about the game against the Denver Broncos. As we said, it wasn't pretty, but it was a win. Might be a lot prettier if you're a defensive coordinator. I think any game that has just four scores and only one touchdown in it might be a thing of beauty for defensive coordinators. Most folks like the back and forth. I think the game down in Houston for the offensive aficionados certainly looked a lot prettier. Defensively, on a cold day in Arrowhead Stadium, the Chiefs defense did the job. The offense did the job. Got enough points with the performance of the defense to give the Kansas City Chiefs a win. Was a very good performance overall for the Chiefs as they give up just 247 total yards to the Broncos. Now, there were problems. They give up 161 on the ground, all to no Sean Marino. That's not great. And the Chiefs' run defense has been outstanding against everybody in the league except for Knowshon Moreno. He's the only back to go for 100 yards against the Chiefs, and he's done it twice. However, Kyle Orton really snuffed out in this football game. Not near the performance he had. A brilliant performance in the first game this time, 9 of 28 for 117. No touchdowns. The defense getting the job done against the Denver Bronco offense. And to me, that's the story of this football game. The defense and the game plan of Romeo Crennel are the story of this football game. A lot of the game I spent watching, and I always like to look at what the personnel groupings are. Much easier to see when you're in the stadium and you can get a look at all 11 guys. And the Chiefs spent a lot of time, particularly in the second half, in what was basically, I would call, a, you know, if you want to identify the linemen and the linebackers, a 2-3 defensive alignment. Glenn Dorsey, along with Wallace Gilberry as the two defensive linemen. And then a lot of times, either Studebaker or Vrabel, many times Andy Studebaker, along with Tom Bahaly on the outside linebacker spots, Derek Johnson on the inside, and that was it. Now, playing an inside linebacker spot was number 47, John McGraw. He was up in that scheme, really lined up as a linebacker, so call it a 2-4. And they did attack with the outside guys in passing situations, so they were bringing plenty of guys against it, but they were clearly playing pass defense. That's their two best pass rush defensive linemen. Coupled with an extra, two extra defensive backs in the game, they were in a dime package for much of the second half, and the Broncos took advantage of it, and they would run the ball. And it's a smart move. It's something Peyton Manning does regularly with the Colts. You're going to show dime packages, he'll run the ball at you. And the Broncos did that, and they had effect. They were effective, kind of 20-20. As they moved the ball down the field. But when they got close to the red zone, the Chiefs' defense stiffened. They didn't have as much ground to defend, got easier to play run defenses, bring some of those run defense personnel back out on the field. They could still cover the Bronco passing attack. They played basically pass defense. They wanted to stop the pass. They gave up 161. That is a cause for concern. You don't want to give up that type of running on the ground. But I think it was by design that they said, hey, you may get yards. And we've mentioned this many, many times. Romeo Crennel defenses have always been, and I mean this as a compliment and not a negative, and too often this is thrown around as a negative, they have been bend but don't break. His defenses will bend and give you yards out in the middle of the field, but when it comes to points and you start getting into field goal range or you get into the red zone, they stiffen and do not allow points. Right now in total defense, yardage-wise, the Chiefs are 16th in the NFL. Points allowed, they're 9th. They're a top 10 team in the points that they allow. That's a great statement by Romeo Crennel, and it's not a coincidence. Every single year, he was the defensive coordinator of the New England Patriots. They were better in points allowed than they were yards allowed. So this is by design, and it's ultimately makes him one of the most decorated and one of the best defensive coordinators in the history of this game, and that's what you saw here. I think he bent with the running game out between the 20s, maybe out between the 30s, but didn't break. And then stiffened up and kept the Broncos off the board. Only 6 points for the Denver Broncos is a great day for any defensive coordinator. So that 161 isn't pretty. But taken into context with the facts that they had virtually no passing offense whatsoever in this game, managing just 86 yards through the air after you take away the yardage for sacks. And it was a great day for the defense. Overall, 247 yards. You do that every single game, you'll be the number one defense in the NFL. So that was a fantastic performance, limiting Denver to just 55 snaps of the football and only 22 minutes, 23 when you round up, minutes of time of possession. This was an excellent defensive day. 161 will be talked about. It is something you'd like to do even better against, but I think it's by design. They took away the pass. They took away the big plays that killed them, particularly in the first quarter against the Broncos. And the outcome is different. The Chiefs win. They advance. They move on. They take a 2-game lead in the AFC West. Romeo Crennel and his defensive scheme and his defensive coaches and defensive players certainly deserve a lot of credit in this game. Matt Cassel, we've given a lot of accolades to throughout the course of the season, and for good reason. This game looks very pedestrian for Matt Cassel. 17 of 31 for 196 yards, one TD, no interceptions, and a quarterback rating of 85. He obviously put up gaudy numbers against the Broncos in trying to come back in Denver. These are not gaudy numbers, but these are the numbers of a guy who I think played one of his best games as a Kansas City Chief. It's not about the statistics. It's about a quarterback leading his team to victory. He did it on a tough day, a cold day, a day where Champ Bailey did a great job taking away his number one weapon in Dwayne Bowe. Matt Cassel did not panic. If you watch the Monday Night Football game with Mark Sanchez, they got down, they had tough times, and he tried to force the ball, and he had 3 turnovers. Matt Cassel didn't turn the football over. Sometimes the other team does a great job. You can't panic and try to force things, and Matt Cassel didn't. And I think one of the best plays he's taken, he's done a great job at avoiding sacks this year for the Kansas City Chiefs, throwing the ball away. We saw him do that numerous times in this game, avoiding a loss of yardage while not trying to force the ball or throw it up for grabs a la, well, Brett Favre, as he's done at times throughout the course of his career, throwing the football away, great plays. But on their fourth and goal, a time where you absolutely want to get points, you're going for it, you're trying to punch it in, fourth and goal from the two, Matt Cassel drops back. Denver's got a great play call. They come with a blitz off one side. Matt Cassel has to evade, go straight back to try to avoid the rush, which takes him straight back into where Brandon Albert is pushing the pass rush up the field. He's got a defender all around him. Does he throw it up for grabs? Last second desperation heave and say, oh, well, it's fourth down. Hopefully it'll be incomplete and it'll be their ball at the two and risk a pick six, which happens when you just throw the ball up for grab. No, he hates it, but he eats it and he takes the sack. He doesn't want to take the sack. He's been avoiding the sacks, but he takes the sack. They lose a lot of yards, but they force the Denver Broncos to go 80-plus yards down the field. They go for it on fourth. They don't get it, but they don't give Denver points. They don't give them a big turnover the same way they turned the football over in Denver. Remember, down 28-0, looked like the Chiefs were getting something going. Matt Cassel sacked, forced fumble. The Broncos pick it up, go the other way for a touchdown. That didn't happen in this game. That's a great play. Matt Cassel didn't have everything working, but he played brilliantly in taking care of the football. Made the play when he had the chance, went to, I would guess, his third option with Leonard Pope on the touchdown. Finds him. They get it. They take the lead. They go on to hold the lead and not give Denver an easy turnover to try to get back into it. Good football being played by Matt Cassel. Doesn't look gaudy, but that was a big game and a well-played game by the quarterback. That's the type of heady play you need as you head into the postseason. And I'll tell you this, 10-6, close games, you better be ready to win close games. And you better be ready to win ugly games, and you better be ready to win in the cold. You take a look at the playoff teams in the AFC, it ain't going to be warm in New England or Pittsburgh or New York or Baltimore or Kansas City when we get towards postseason. If the playoffs look the way they look right now, the only possible warm weather site is Jacksonville. And even that will be probably in the 40s, maybe 50 degrees. But the rest of the towns that are looking like playoff teams, cold, cold weather. You better know how to win cold weather football games. It was ugly. It wasn't pretty, but that's a playoff type of football game, and the Chiefs found a way to win it. Do they have to play better? Sure, they'll have to play better to beat a team like the Patriots or the Jets or the Ravens or the Steelers. But no doubt, they found a way to win. They've got a two-game cushion in the AFC West. That is huge for the Kansas City Chiefs. All right, we'll talk about the game with the Chargers coming up next. We'll take a break, come back. Todd Villalobos from KFMB-TV in San Diego is next.
The Red Zone with Soren Petro will be right back here on KCChiefs.com.
Every Sunday, a city of more than 2 million unites. A community of fans thousands strong anticipates. A team of 53 players charges the field.
It's a sweep left to the fullback, and a great block springs him to the outside. He's up the left sideline.
And one grocery store is proud to support them all.
He's going to outrace everyone to the end zone. Touchdown, Kansas City!
Hy-Vee, an official sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs. A Kansas City Chiefs fan, they'll tailgate just about anywhere. And they live to hear the three most important words ever.
With Hy-Vee's weekly tailgate specials, you'll find everything you need for your next Chiefs tailgate or Chiefs party. Stop into Hy-Vee and stock up with new tailgate specials every week.
Hy-Vee, an official sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Hi, we're Giacomo and Angelo, and we make Palermo's Pizza.
We actually grew up in a pizzeria where we learned to toss pizza dough by hand.
So you can believe our new hand-tossed-style frozen pizzas offer taste your family will love, guaranteed.
Yep, our pizza's 200% authentic, like us.
200%?
Yeah, 100% times two of us.
Well, obviously, Papa didn't teach you math. Anyway, look for our new hand-tossed-style pizzas and try one.
Palermo's, it's pizzeria perfect.
And the official frozen pizza of the Chiefs.
It is time for a new era with new vision and new hope. This is the 2010 Kansas City Chiefs, a team on the rise with the opening of the new and improved Arrowhead Stadium. It's got a new body, but still has the same soul. A team with electrifying young talent.
Charles on his feet, left side angling, cutback, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Jamal Charles.
A team focused, disciplined, and determined under the direction of head coach Todd Haley.
Just do your job and we'll win this game.
And the Chiefs put the hammer down.
Now is the perfect time to be part of the energy and excitement of one of the best atmospheres in the NFL.
And this kick is good. Ryan Suckup wins the game in overtime.
The party starts this August. Lock down your season tickets now by going to kcchiefs.com. Experience the new Arrowhead Stadium. New body, same soul. Now, let's get back into the Red Zone with Soren Petro, exclusively on kcchiefs.com.
Welcome back here in the Red Zone here at kcchiefs.com as we get you ready for the Chiefs and Chargers. Big game with the San Diego Chargers. Maybe not quite as big as it looked last week. Let's talk to Todd Villalobos, KFMB in San Diego, joins us next. Todd, how you doing, man?
Very well, thank you.
All right, the Chargers not doing so well. It looked like this division was setting up for a classic Chargers second-half comeback 11, or second-half run, 11 straight wins last year. They were chugging along, just dominating their opposition again, owning the month of November and December. They'd won four in a row to get back to 6-5 and actually controlled their own destiny. We'd gone through all the tiebreaker scenarios with a win against the Chiefs and an equal record at the end of the year. They would have been the tiebreaker. So they had their own destiny in their hands, and they fall to the Oakland Raiders. What happened in San Diego last weekend?
Well, what happened was that they got pushed around pretty severely by the Raiders, and they took a lot of people by surprise. Although it really shouldn't have, I mean, even though the Chargers have dominated the series against the Raiders for the last, quite some time, the Raiders have always been a tough matchup physically for the Chargers. They always seem to come out of the game banged up and hurt and injured, and it always seems to take a few weeks to recover, but the Raiders have never been able to put up more points than the Chargers, and that's changed this year. I think a lot of people are surprised, a little bit shocked at how devastated they were by the Raiders' offensive line. The defensive line, Philip Rivers was in trouble all day almost. I can't remember a single time he went back to throw and wasn't harassed. The Raiders' running game put up a 250-something yards rushing. I mean, it was just a total annihilation from top to bottom, really.
And what went wrong for the Charger defense? I mean, it's been the number one defense in the NFL for most of this year. It would seem that and the Raiders have just been okay at offense. What you mentioned the offensive line shoving them around, but were they just in a look ahead situation, looking ahead to this game this week with Kansas City, and maybe didn't come with their A game?
You know, I don't think so. The Chargers have been pretty good about that over the past few years, especially when they get behind the eight ball and they have to kind of win out, which seems to happen every year. But I think it was just – I think that the idea that the Chargers defense is number one in the league is probably a little bit of a misleading statistic. You know, there have been a lot of mitigating factors, a lot of short fields that Chargers opponents have had to go because of the turnovers and special teams disasters. And I think the Charger offense is able to put a lot of time on the clock. So I don't think it's – I don't think anybody here believes, and I don't even think the Chargers believe, to be quite honest with you, that they really did have the number one defense in the league. And I think that if there was a matchup, if you see 2 weeks back-to-back, a matchup that really favored the Chargers, another finesse team with the Colts, that the Chargers were able to make look really bad from a Colts offense standpoint. And then you look at the opposite, a power team, a team that really is taking pride in being very physical in the Raiders. I think you see the teams that the Chargers have trouble with and the teams that they don't have trouble with, and that's what manifested itself on Sunday.
The special teams have just been atrocious this year for the Chargers. Been a little better of late, but were awful in the beginning. How do you get four punts blocked in the first half of the season? What's been the problem there?
Well, it's something they've spent the entire season trying to fix. I could tell you that a lot of it has been injuries that have filtered down, which is what usually happens when teams start to have troubles with special teams. You get injuries to your starting players, and the guys that were on your – the guys, the backup linebackers and things, the guys with the core of your special teams now have to move into the starting roles from a defensive standpoint, and that filters down to the special teams. That's a classic example of what happened to him this year. Especially the Chargers linebacking corps has just been devastated by injuries. I mean, they were signing guys off the street, and they were starting that week. So that's one thing. And just a bunch of bonehead, inexplicable plays where there's a guy right in front of you. You're supposed to block him. You know you're supposed to block him, or the coaches think you know you're supposed to block him, and you turn to the other side, and the guy runs right by you and blocks a punt. And I think that's what probably has people more mystified is just the boneheadedness of some of these plays, but then some of the injuries are factored in as well.
Against the Raiders, they just were not able to get the running game going. That's been a throughout most of the LaDainian Tomlinson era, and at times this year they've been very good. We know the passing game has been their strength, but is the running game deteriorating right now? Is it getting worse, or was this just a day that the Raiders had their number?
Well, you can't say that the Charger running game is getting worse. They just didn't run the ball, period. I mean, I think they had 21 yards rushing, and five of those were Philip Rivers scrambling, but I think they only ran the ball legitimately seven times. So there really was no running game. Ryan Matthews, the big shot rookie that they traded up to draft in the first round, was finally healthy, and they made a big deal out about him being back this week and getting some carries, didn't see the field. So it was just a matter of they got down 14-0 early, and if you ever watch North Turner, I'm telling you, it's something to behold. If they get down even a little bit, he will just abandon that running game like it does not even exist, and that's exactly what happened Sunday. They get down early 14-0, and there went the running game. They didn't even try to run the ball after that.
And the flip side is they couldn't stop the run, something they've been very good at. I know that you give some credit to the other team, but 251 is ridiculous. The Chiefs are the number one rushing team in the NFL. Is the expectation that the Chiefs are going to be able to come in there and run the ball with the same kind of effectiveness?
You know, I think that would be the perception, although I heard somebody make a decent point that the Chiefs are, and correct me if I'm wrong, I've watched them, you know, pretty much every game this year, and this is the impression I have of them. They are really more of a sweep rushing team where they like to get Jamal Charles and McCluster and Thomas Jones outside. And I think the Chargers probably measure up a little bit better with that style of running game than the Raiders, who really just line up with two tight ends and just run straight ahead. It will be interesting to see if that happens. Obviously, that's going to be a point of focus for both teams this week. The Chiefs no doubt saw on tape what the Raiders did, and they're going to try to duplicate that. It'll be interesting to see. I think the Chiefs probably have a little bit of a different style of running game than the Raiders do, and we'll see if the Chargers are better able to match up with that style than they did with the Raiders.
I think I heard a stat back in the game against the Texans that at that time they had lost 13 fumbles, and that in the entire 2009 season they only lost seven. Sproles bobbled the punt. I mean, turnovers have just been coming everywhere. Is it just a bad year that, you know, maybe they've been a little bit lucky, the yin and yang of things, the ball bounced their way the last couple of years, and now they're kind of paying for it all in one year, and every time the ball goes down, it seems to bounce to the other team?
Yeah, I mean, that's true also. And you never want to make excuses, and turnovers are something that ought not happen. But you would think that every now and then when you drop a ball that it might bounce. Bounce back to one of your guys or to somebody else. It does seem like every time the Chargers put the ball on the ground, the other team ends up being right there to pick it up. And then conversely, when they do force fumbles, it seems like it never results in any kind of a turnover for the Chargers. So there has been a little bit of that, a little bit of bad luck. And I guess they have had a lot go right the last few years. So maybe this is just that one year where it's just not your year.
What about this year for Philip Rivers? He's putting up some incredible statistics when it comes to throwing the football, as he's was at one point on pace for well over 5,000 yards. That's backed off a little bit, but it's still within reach. It could happen. Is this the year? I'm sure Rivers has been a fan favorite, and people have understood that he's a good player. But is this the year he's become that franchise caliber player and maybe being talked about with the Dan Fouts of the world?
Yeah, I think that's probably been the case now for a couple years. They did give him, close to a $100 million contract before this season even started. So I think definitely before this season he had reached that level. And I think obviously what he's done this season has even, you know, further solidified him as probably at some point going to pass Dan Fouts. I mean, if you look at what's going to happen with his career, he's probably going to pass Dan Fouts as the greatest quarterback in Chargers history. And I think that, I think the only thing missing and this is what we've talked about here in San Diego for a long time now, especially now that Drew Brees has a Super Bowl ring, is that he doesn't have one. And so as long as he doesn't have one, it'll probably keep him out of that top two or three tier with the Bradys and the Mannings and the Drew Breeses even now. But here locally, yeah, he's probably at the top of the list now.
Is this we're talking to Todd Villalobos from KFMB in San Diego. Does this, you know, the team still feel like they're very much in it for the playoffs? By that I mean, okay, they can beat the Chiefs and get to within one game. Is there an expectation out there that, hey, the Chiefs are going to stumble enough to let the Chargers back into it? Or do a lot of people and maybe the team itself feel like the Chargers' chance of continuing their streak of four straight division titles ended with that loss at home to the Raiders?
Well, I think probably what a lot of people are pointing to might be that game after the Chargers. Am I right that the Chiefs go to face the Rams on the road?
Yes.
After the Chargers? That's correct. I mean, I think if you look at that game, that's probably a pretty tough game for the Chiefs. So I think the Chargers probably feel, and I know that there was a lot of you know, sour grapes and a lot of really angry fans yesterday. But I think if you look forward, if the Chargers do win this game on Sunday, there's a good chance that the Chiefs could stumble the next week in St. Louis. St. Louis is playing really well right now, and that's probably going to be a tough place to play on the road, even though it's not that big of a, not that long of a road trip. I think the Chargers still feel that even with that loss, I think we went back and looked at all the tiebreakers, and if everybody does play out, and if the Chiefs do stumble the next week and the Chargers win out, I think the Chargers, I think it goes to like the fifth tiebreaker in common opponents, and I think the Chargers have that tiebreaker. So I think there's still a glimmer of hope, and that's one thing the Chargers have been really good at, is when they are with their backs against the wall and when everybody's kind of upset with them and doubting them and saying the season's over, they do have an incredible ability, and this is what North Turner's been very good at, is just focusing on this one game. Let's just take this one game at a time, and they take that approach very seriously. So they don't think they're out of it. I think maybe as the week progresses and some of these scenarios get laid out, I think the fans might start to realize that there is still a decent chance that they could win the division. So
yeah, there is. I mean,
it's so exciting
with a win, and you know, and they're right there over their shoulder because we've run the tiebreakers as well, and San Diego is in the driver's seat. The Chiefs really beating up on the NFC West. That's been their. Now, they're undefeated against them with just that game against the Rams. You mentioned Norv Turner's ability to get the team to focus. What is the status right now amongst fans on Norv Turner as the coach and on A.J. Smith as the general manager?
Well, as far as Norv Turner goes, he's been a whipping boy here since the day he was hired, and the team never does him any favors either by getting off the slow starts every year. You know, he's not all that popular. When they're winning, he's like every other coach, but he just seems to have less margin for error because of the reputation he had when he got here. So he gets off to these slow starts, and everybody wants to throw him under the bus, and then they get off to these raging finishes, and everybody thinks that him and the team are the greatest thing since sliced bread, and then the season seems to come to a crashing halt, and everybody wants his head again. So no, he's not the most popular guy in town. Even when they're winning, there's still that kind of a, you know, well, we still do have Norv as our coach. There's still that kind of an attitude. And as far as A.J. Smith goes, I mean, his stock really has taken a turn for the worse, you know. These last three drafts, quite honestly, have been just god-awful. And the way he treated, Marcus McNeil and Vincent Jackson, and, you know, it just didn't have to play out that way. You know, as soon as Marcus reported, he got a deal, and there's a lot of people saying, well, why in the world couldn't he just have that deal from the beginning of the season? We wouldn't have to miss him for all those games. And so both of them are not they're not the two most popular guys in San Diego, let me tell you that. And so, you know, when they're winning, they're a little more popular. When they're not, it's probably just like everybody else. But both of their stocks, especially A.J. Smith's stock, you know, from a popularity standpoint, really has fallen the last 12 months.
All right, let me give you kind of an off-the-wall question, and that is the future of the Chargers in San Diego. The franchise began in L.A. They're starting, it appears to be, some serious momentum towards getting a stadium built in Los Angeles, and they'll be looking for a team. And folks at AEG even leaking out that they've been talking to teams. I know they're still playing at the old Jack Murphy Stadium. They're in San Diego. They've lost out. They're out of the Super Bowl rotation because they don't have one of the modern stadiums. I was there at that last one they had between the Bucks and the Raiders. What's the future of the Chargers in San Diego and the chances of getting a new stadium?
The answer is I don't know, and nobody knows. I don't think the team knows. I don't think Dean Spanos knows. I don't think Ant Schultz from the AEG group knows. I don't think anybody knows. This city, the Chargers have been a victim of very poor timing in the fact that when they started this process of trying to get a new stadium built here, which is almost impossible to do in California anyway. I mean, nobody has a new football stadium. For some reason, they're able to build baseball stadiums here, only on occasion, but they never can seem to be able to build football stadiums here. I mean, there's still not one in L.A. There's still not one in the Bay Area. There's not one here in San Diego. And all those markets have been trying for over a decade to get one built. And as far as the poor timing goes, the city leadership for the last 5 or 6 years here in San Diego has been so bad, so inept, so corrupt, that they haven't been able to make almost any progress whatsoever. Now, they seem to have gotten some of those issues cleared up. They seem to have some competent people in there now making decisions. And they seem to be making a little bit of progress. They have a location nailed down. They're working on language here in San Diego to get on a ballot in 2012. So as long as that possibility still exists, and as long as they really don't have any concrete plans in Los Angeles, I still don't know where their options are other than to stay in San Diego. So I think everybody certainly is monitoring what's happening in L.A. There was an article in the paper up in L.A. today by T.J. Simers that says he thinks the Chargers are going to buy out of their contract in February, which is just a couple months away, and go play in the Coliseum in 2012 until they build a new stadium. You know, I just don't think until there's any concrete plans for L.A., I just don't see what their options are anyway.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I'd hate to see the Chargers leave San Diego. I think it's a great fit. I'd like to see them get that new stadium. And I'd like to go cover Super Bowls in San Diego. I love going out there, and I don't get to go there anymore for the Super Bowl. Trust me, I don't need to go to Detroit again. I need to go to San Diego again. So hopefully they'll get a new stadium done. All right, I'll leave you with this, Todd. Give me your prediction on the game. Who wins? What kind of score are you looking at?
You know, this is probably the game I'm most confused about all year. It's hard to say. I can see the Chiefs coming and running the ball just like the Raiders did. But you know what? The Chargers play well with their backs against the wall. You know, for what, 4 straight years now, they seem to pull out these games during the regular season when they need to. So I'm going to say the Chargers win. I think they're going to I don't think they're going to have too much trouble scoring points. I'm going to say let's go 34-20 Chargers.
All right. It'll be interesting to see if that happens. We certainly are rooting the other way. But, Todd, we appreciate the time. Great stuff as always. We'll talk to you again here real soon.
All right. Thank you.
The Red Zone with Soren Petro will be right back here on KCChiefs.com.
Welcome to Chiefs Country, where fans like you wear their passion for their team like war paint. It's for you, Chiefs fans, that we created Chiefs Checking, with the official Chiefs debit card and discounts on Chiefs gear all year long.
Visit Metcalf Bank or ChiefsChecking.com, and for a limited time, sign up and score a Chiefs game day cooler.
Chiefs Checking, because you're not just a fan on Sunday.
Only at Metcalf Bank. Strong roots, endless possibilities. Member Central Bank Company, member FDIC. See bank for details.
Hey, Chiefs fans, I'm Josh Looney of KCChiefs.com.
And I am the Internet. I usually don't endorse websites, but KCChiefs.com is legit.
I know. At KCChiefs.com, you can check out my daily blog, exclusive video content, see what's going on with the team. You can also interact with other fans in Chiefs 365, and much more.
I'm so excited. I can barely contain myself.
You want the Chiefs? Go to the Chiefs at KCChiefs.com.
The NFL season is here.
Carroll's on his feet. Left side angle. Cutback.
And your Kansas City Chiefs are back.
Touchdown! Jamal Charles!
Cheer on the Chiefs all season long at the new Arrowhead Stadium. Don't wait. Get your tickets now at kcchiefs.com, the Arrowhead Stadium box office, or any Ticketmaster location. Head coach Todd Haley and your Kansas City Chiefs are determined and ready for battle, taking it game by game. And you won't want to miss any of the action live. Get your single game tickets now to see the Chiefs take on the Jaguars, Bills, Cardinals, Titans, or AFC West rivals the Broncos and Raiders. Great seats are available now at kcchiefs.com, the Arrowhead Stadium box office, or any Ticketmaster location. Come and get loud and cheer your Chiefs on to victory at the new Arrowhead Stadium. New body, same soul. Now, let's get back into the Red Zone with Soren Petro, exclusively on KCChiefs.com.
All right, welcome back. You're listening to the Red Zone at KCChiefs.com. Our thanks to Todd Villalobos, KFMB TV in San Diego. Give us the latest on North Turner, A.J. Smith, the Chargers. Disappointing loss for them. They'll try to get things going again against Kansas City, but you heard Todd there. Chargers feel like they're in it. They think that Ram game could be the one to give them the get-out-of-jail-free card after stubbing their toe. Had won four football games in a row to get back to 6-5, dropped to the Raiders. They're counting on beating the Chiefs, and then the Chiefs dropping one, maybe to the Rams. I'll say this. I think Tennessee coming in here is a tough game. Oakland coming in here is a tough game. Still three tough football games after this Charger game. Win this Charger game, gets a lot easier to win the division. Huge game in San Diego. Playoff picture as it stands right now. We always like to keep you up to date since, hey, it's been years since we could talk about the Chiefs being in the playoffs. So let's take a look at how it looks right now for the Kansas City Chiefs. The playoffs were today. New England and Pittsburgh each getting the bye. They'll sit and wait. New England, the 1 seed at 10-2. Pittsburgh, the 2 seed at 9-3 off their wins on Sunday and Monday Night Football. The Steelers taking out the Ravens on Sunday night, and the Pats destroying the Jets on Monday night. That sets up the Chiefs as the 3 seed, 8-4, playing a home game in the wild card round. Jacksonville, 7-5, would be the 4 seed as they are in the lead. Got a game up on the Indianapolis Colts. So right now they're the AFC South team. They'd be the 4 seed. Jets are the 5 seed at 9-3. They'd go to Jacksonville in the opener, and the 8-4 Baltimore Ravens come to Kansas City in the opener if the playoffs were today. A lot of football still to be played. They've got a lot to still accomplish. All of these teams do. But I'd be surprised. You know, I think we feel pretty good. The Jets, the Pats, the Ravens, the Steelers are going to be there only because the Chiefs haven't won this in a while. I don't want to wave the checkered flag on a Chiefs team that hasn't seen the playoffs since the 2006 season, hasn't seen a home game since the 03 season, hasn't seen a win in the playoffs since 1993. We'll say that division's still up for grabs, and certainly Jacksonville at 7-5, Indy at 6-6, Houston and Tennessee at 5-7. That division is still up for grabs as well. We'll see how it plays out in the long run. But San Diego, and I don't want to rule out the Raiders, also at 6-6. This division still up for grabs. A lot of football to be contested. But that's how it stands right now. Chiefs would get the Ravens if the game was today. Then they would go on the road if they won. If Jacksonville won, they'd go on the road to Pittsburgh. If Jacksonville didn't win and the Jets won, they'd go on the road. Well, they'd be going to Pittsburgh either way if they won, because they'd be the highest-seeded team still in there. So a game at Pittsburgh, and then they would need a lower seed also to win at New England to bring the AFC Championship game back to Kansas City. Chances of getting up to that number 2 seed, it could happen. They've obviously got to stay in front of the Baltimore Ravens, which right now has a better conference record, 6-3 to 5-4, which is what it comes down to if your head-to-head record is the same. So the Chiefs need to clear the Steelers by a full game. The Steelers are a game up on them. What does Pittsburgh have left? They've got Cincinnati at home, the Jets at home, Carolina at home, and at Cleveland. Cleveland playing better football. They're all the way up to 5-7. So that road game at Cleveland could be one where Cleveland is playing for a chance to knock off a division rival. The game at home against the Jets, two tough games. They drop both of those. That's 5 losses. The Chiefs went out. They would pass Pittsburgh and could move up into that number 2 seed. But 3 straight home games now for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Bengals, doesn't look like the Bengals have much of a chance to knock them off. Carolina, I don't think so. There's 2 wins in the bank. At best, I think you look at that, okay, they could lose those 2 games. At best, they lose one of them. I think 12-4 is going to be the Steelers' record when this season's all said and done, and maybe 13-3, but certainly I think 12-4 might be the low water mark for the Pittsburgh Steelers. 11-5 is the worst I can possibly see it. The Steelers now sit at 7-2 in conference, so the Chiefs need to make up 2 games in conference. They need them to lose 2 games, so the Jets and Cleveland would accomplish that and get them down to a record of just 8-4 in the conference. The Chiefs could match that by winning all 3 of their AFC games left. Then you start getting down into deeper tiebreakers. We won't go into it. So the chance is there for the Chiefs to move past the Pittsburgh Steelers, maybe even move past the New York Jets. Similar situation. They, too, sit at 7-2 in their conference. Should they take over the Patriots for that spot in the number 1 seed? But cannot see the Chiefs getting in front of the Pats. 2 full games in front of the Chiefs, 8-2 in conference. Going to look pretty difficult for the Chiefs to get in front of New England. New England has to go to Chicago, home for Green Bay, but then at Buffalo and home for Miami. Boy, I can't see worse than 12-4 for them, and most likely 13-3 on the bottom end, and maybe a 14-2 season. Looks like the Chiefs are pretty locked into that number three seed if they can hold on to the AFC West. Maybe they could be surpassed. Indianapolis has a head-to-head win. If the Chiefs tumble down to 10-6, Indianapolis would win the tiebreaker, go to the 3. The Chiefs would go to the 4 if the Colts can get past the Jaguars. So just something to keep in mind. But take care of business. Chiefs win, and they're in. Chiefs win, and they're AFC West champions, and in all likelihood, in a very good situation, the number 3 seed and playing a home playoff game here at Kansas City. That would be huge. Point something else out about the statistics. The Kansas City Chiefs going for an undefeated home season. That has only happened 4 times previous. 1971, they went 7-0. 95, 97, and 03, they went 8-0 at home. So they're trying to achieve the perfect home record for the 5th time in franchise history. The scary thing about that is all 4 years that they went undefeated, they then played a home playoff game and lost. They were 0-1 in the postseason in each one of those years. 1971, in the longest game in NFL history on Christmas Day, they lost to the Miami Dolphins. 1995, they played at home, and Jim Harbaugh and the Colts took them out. 1997, John Elway and the Denver Broncos took them out at Arrowhead Stadium. And then in 2003, Peyton Manning and the Indianapolis Colts knocking off the Chiefs. So going for the perfect home schedule, home record, has not meant, if you get there, hasn't meant success in the postseason for the Kansas City Chiefs. Hopefully that would change this year. Rankings-wise, offensive and defensive, I talked about points allowed for the Chiefs. The Chiefs also now top 10 in both points scored and in total offense. In fact, they're the number 6. We've all heard that they're way out in front as the number 1 rushing offense. They're also the number 6 total offensive team. Now, 25 in passing, number 1 in rushing, leads up to, because they're so strong in rushing, the 6th best offense in the NFL by yards, 9th best by points, that number going up. The Chiefs getting into the top 10 there. And as I mentioned, 9th in points allowed. They're the only AFC team in the playoff hunt, and I believe the only AFC team, period, as a matter of fact, that is top 10 in both of those categories, at number 9 in points for and number 9 in points allowed. They're the only one. I'll give an example of the Pats, number 1 in points scored, but 18 in points allowed. Steelers, number 2 in points allowed, but 15 in points scored. The Chiefs, the only one top 10 in both. I'm not sure what that's worth, but it is interesting. There are 3 teams in the NFC that fit that bill. Atlanta is 6th in scoring, 7th in points allowed. Packers are the 7th best scoring team and best in points allowed in the NFL, number 1. And the Saints, 8th in scoring points, 5th in points allowed. So there are 3 NFC teams that fit that bill, all strong teams. The Chiefs, though, clearly a strong team. 9th in points for, 9th in points allowed, has them as one of the strongest teams in the AFC. We'll take a break when we come back. Leonard Pope up next, the man to score the touchdown against the Denver Broncos. He joins us next here in the Red Zone.
The Red Zone with Soren Petro will be right back here on KCChiefs.com. It is time for a new era with new vision and new hope. This is the 2010 Kansas City Chiefs, a team on the rise with the opening of the new and improved Arrowhead Stadium. It's got a new body, but still has the same soul. A team with electrifying young talent.
Charles on his feet, left side angle, cutback, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Jamal Charles.
A team focused, disciplined, and determined under the direction of head coach Todd Haley.
Just do your job and we'll win this game. And the Chiefs put the hammer down.
Now is the perfect time to be part of the energy and excitement of one of the best atmospheres in the NFL.
And this kick is good. Ryan Suckup wins the game in overtime.
The party starts this August. Lock down your season tickets now by going to KCChiefs.com. Experience the new Arrowhead Stadium. New body, same soul.
Every Sunday, a city of more than 2 million unites. A community of fans thousands strong anticipates. A team of 53 players charges the field.
It's a sweep left to the fullback. And a great block springs over the outside. He's up the left sideline.
And one grocery store is proud to support them all.
20. He's going to outrace everyone to the end zone. Touchdown, Kansas City!
Hy-Vee, an official sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs. A Kansas City Chiefs fan, they'll tailgate just about anywhere. And they live to hear the 3 most important words ever.
Tailgate, Kansas!
With Hy-Vee's weekly tailgate specials, you'll find everything you need for your next Chiefs tailgate or Chiefs party. Stop into Hy-Vee and stock up with new tailgate specials every week.
Hy-Vee, an official sponsor of the Kansas City Chiefs.
Now, let's get back into the Red Zone with Soren Petro, exclusively on KCChiefs.com.
Welcome back. You're in the Red Zone here at KCChiefs.com. Soren Petro with you on a Wednesday, a victorious Wednesday, as the Chiefs coming off a big win against the Denver Broncos, looking ahead to a giant game in San Diego against the four-time AFC West defending champion San Diego Chargers. Joining us here in the Red Zone is Chiefs tight end Leonard Pope. Leonard, how are you doing, man?
Pretty good. How you guys doing?
Not too bad. I think life as a Chiefs fan, and I would think life as a Chief, is a lot better with a nice, comfortable two-game lead in the AFC West, which you guys earned with that victory over the Denver Broncos. How does it feel to be in the driver's seat in this division right now at this point in the year?
I mean, you know, it's December. You know, in order to give yourself a chance, you know, at the next level, you got to win. So, you know, it feels pretty good right now, but, you know, at the same time, you know, us as a team, we're staying very humble because, you know, any game can be that game that is determining the factor. So, you know, we're just staying kind of on the radar still.
You know, around town last week, I heard a lot of Chiefs fans talking as much about this week's game against the Chargers as they were about last week's game against the Denver Broncos. And whenever I hear that kind of thing, I worry about what we call the look-ahead factor, that you're looking ahead to another game. How big was this Charger game last week, and how much were you guys thinking about San Diego, even though Denver was the next game on the schedule?
I mean, we knew, you know, every Sunday is it's going to be that game. You know, we knew we had to beat Denver or whatnot, and we knew we had to come out with that and just try to have a, you know, a focused mindset or whatnot. But we knew the next game, every game, is, you know, gets bigger every time you play the next game. So we knew San Diego was just as important.
The game in Denver was ugly, 49-29. Everything that could go against you guys seemed to go against you. How much was, you know, revenge or maybe just atoning for what was the worst performance you guys had all year? How much was that on your mind going into that Bronco game?
I mean, we knew, you know, the whole world saw, you know, how the game came about last time and stuff, but we knew us as a team, we knew who we were, and we knew what we had to do because, you know, then nobody, you know, beat ourselves but ourselves out there. So we knew we had a lot of stuff we had to clean up and whatnot, so we just had to get back to the basics.
What's your view of when things like that happen, you know, when games like that happen? Is that just part of it? Some days just not your day? Everything seems to go right for the other team and go wrong for you? Is that how you have to look at it, or is there a better way to say, hey, no, we just flat out made mistakes? How do you view a game that went as wrong as that Bronco game did?
I mean, you know, sometimes you can look at it as mistakes or, you know, I mean, it's football. You know, things happen like that sometimes. But, you know, the good teams, you know, those are the guys and the teams that find a way to, you know, overcome those obstacles, you know, when they're occurring in the game. So, that's just what we're just trying to define ourselves as right now, you know, that team that are able to overcome those things during the game.
How do you put a game like that behind you? I know you were in a game like that. I can't remember the score. I want to say in 2008 when you remember the Cardinals and Todd Haley was the offensive coordinator with the Cardinals, it was like 47-7 or something. New England beat you guys late in the year, and a lot of people said, hey, you know, that's it. They're not going to be able to rebound from that, but you guys certainly did. What is the key? I mean, you guys took off from that game. Is there any chance that this is a similar kind of launching point here for this Chiefs team?
I mean, I would like to hope so and say so, but, you know, at the same time, you know, we're still just, you know, building our team up or whatnot. But, you know, Coach, he always tell us to, you know, to stay focused and go out and just play as hard as we can. And, you know, that's what we've just been trying to do every Sunday.
All right, we're talking to Leonard Pope, Chiefs tight end here in the Red Zone. The cold weather, how has the weather been a factor this year? I know in the game against Buffalo there was a tremendous crosswind. It didn't seem that windy against the Denver Broncos. It was certainly much colder than it's been at any point so far this year. How much did the weather impact how that game ended up being played?
I mean, you know, Kansas City and area, you know, it's a tough place to play, you know, in December or whatnot, and we practice in it every day. So, you know, it kind of, you know, trained a good effect in it on our part. But, you know, at the same time, you know, it is Kansas City and it is December and it does get cold here. So, you know.
Yeah, it is. Is it an advantage? I mean, against the Denver Broncos, I'm sure they're used to practicing in it as well. It might not be an advantage. Do you see it as an advantage in the future? Should you get any games here against some warm weather teams?
I mean, you can look at it that way, but at the same time, you know, it's still a football game. And, you know, whoever had that thrive to, you know, the game that power it is, you know, those are going to be the team that wins.
Yeah, you know, and you got the win. A tight football game, something that happens in the NFL all the time. Were you guys confident throughout the game that you would ultimately close out that 10-6 win?
Oh, yeah. You know, that's what you look towards your leaders for, you know, the Matt Castles and the Mike Vrabels and those guys like that and Brian Waters, you know, because those guys have been in situations like that before. And, you know, once you don't see the, you know, the scare nothing in their face, you know, it goes a long way. So, you know, we felt confident the whole time.
I know, you know, you played with one of the great quarterbacks of all time, Kurt Warner in Arizona. Matt Castle's playing fantastic football right now. You know, you get some of the same feelings now the way Matt Castle's playing at that quarterback spot to the way things were. I'm not saying he's the same player Kurt Warner is. He's got a lot of football to play to prove himself to be the kind of quarterback Kurt Warner was. But do you get kind of a sense that he's playing at a high level where it feels kind of familiar from your days playing with Kurt Warner?
Yeah, you know, Matt, you know, he's playing at a really high level right now and stuff. And, you know, but at the same time, you know, Matt's very humble and he's a hardworking guy. You know, I tell people a lot, you know, Matt comes in when it's dark in the morning and he leaves the facility when it's dark at night. So, you know, he's taking his game level to a whole nother level.
All right. I mentioned just 10 points in the game. Maybe not a beautiful offensive performance, but a tough win against the Broncos. 7 of those 10 points, or 6 of the 10 points, came on your touchdown. Take me through that play. What's going through your mind when you released? Did you think you were going to be the guy to end up with the ball? And how much do your eyes light up? You know, I think it was your 6th or 7th touchdown in the NFL. How much do your eyes light up when you're in the end zone and see that ball coming your way?
I mean, you know, like, we was on the goal line and whatnot, and, you know, as I came off the ball, I saw the linebacker stay blitzed or whatnot, and, you know, I was just trying to get open and just try to, you know, don't give up on the play. And I saw Matt, and he saw me, and I just threw my hands up in the back of the end zone, and he hit me. So, you know, it was a great feeling, but at the same time, you know, it was just something that we needed to, you know, capitalize on as we was in the red zone and goal line. So, I just had to make that play.
Which is more entertaining for you? You know, maybe a pancake block in the running game or catching a touchdown in the passing game?
I mean, it doesn't matter, you know, because that's mainly been my goal throughout the year, you know, blocking and, you know, sometimes getting out or whatnot. But, you know, I'm here for the team and whatever, you know, Tottenham asking me to do. I'm there to do it.
The passing game seemed to really take off with that game down in Houston, and everything started clicking. You know, did you feel it coming together, all you guys? You know, that passing game was kind of building and would really take off and have the type of consistency and play at the high level that it has been ever since that game.
I mean, you know, I just leave it up to, you know, the way that we practice. You know, Todd tell us all the time, you know, guys, you got to stack good practices on good practices, and, you know, hopefully that'll lead to the game. So, you know, those guys that are doing those things, they're also out there practicing hard also.
You know, the rushing attack really seemed to take off last year. Jamal Charles got inserted in the starting lineup. You came over from Arizona, added a real presence in the blocking game from that tight end position. And you guys ran the ball very effectively last year. And I think because of that, there seemed to be a real confidence back in training camp that you guys would be a good running team. But I don't know that anybody could have predicted that you would be the number one rushing team in the NFL. And not only number one, but number one by almost 25 yards a game. I mean, the team right now is averaging 175 yards per game on the ground. That's a fantastic number. I mean, that's way up there. It's one of the best totals in the last 20, 30 years if you guys keep it up through the end of the year. When did you get a sense that you guys would not only be good at running the ball, but be the best in the NFL this year and putting up these kind of performances?
Well, I would say, again, I take it back to practice. You know, those guys work hard. You know, they get coached hard every day by Coach Carter and whatnot. So, you know, they take great pride. pride and leadership, you know, with Thomas, Ben Olsen and Jamal and, you know, Jackie and Tim and all those guys. You know, they work and practice very hard.
Do you feel, you know, you've been through these before, but some of your teammates probably haven't. Is there extra pressure that comes with being in the race for the playoffs the way you guys are right now?
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, you know, the playoffs is nowhere in my mind because, like I said, we haven't done anything. We're just looking to, you know, keep playing good and, you know, hopefully get this win against San Diego.
Yeah, so you still just stay focused on just the next game. And I mean, it really, fans hear that, and I don't know that they always believe it because fans are always thinking about, you know, the Super Bowl and everything else that's out there. But you guys really are able to block all that out and just focus on the San Diego Chargers?
Yes, that's all our focus is on San Diego right now.
What do you remember about that 21-14 win and that Monday night opener against the Chargers?
To be honest, not that much because, you know, the faster you win the game, the faster you have to lose it, and, you know, on to the next game. So, you know, that was a long time ago, and, you know, here we are again about to play them, so we just focus on this time.
Yeah, it is a big challenge out there. Does the fact that they've won the division 4 straight years, you know, make it a bigger game, give it more emphasis for you guys?
Not really, you know. We just looking at them, you know, as if they've been the contender every year, whatnot, the champions and whatnot. But like I said, we just looking to go out there and just, you know, hopefully get a win.
Team defensive rank, they're number one. The NFL ranks it by yards per game. They're the number one defense in the NFL. As you prepare for them, do they look like the number one team in the number one defense in the NFL?
I mean, you know, those are some very great guys over there. They have fast, flowing linebackers and whatnot, and you know, the secondary is great and the defensive line. So, you know, those are great guys, and, you know, they play hard. So we're just looking to be fortunate to be able to play against.
All right, we're talking to Leonard Pope, Chiefs tight end, joins us here in the red zone. All right, Leonard, final four. Four quickies before I let you go, and I'll start with this. When do you put your decorations up for the holidays?
You know, actually, I did it this Saturday, just passed. I went to the store and got a Christmas tree. Me and the fiancé and my little daughter, we put it up.
Very good.
On top.
Yeah, not bad, not bad. That's always a lot of fun, I know, especially when you got people you care about close, the family.
Exactly.
It's a great time. All right, good. That's about when I got mine up, so I don't feel too bad. I thought you might embarrass me and say it's been up for 2 weeks. I feel good now. All right, how long until Georgia's back?
Man, I don't know. That's a good question, man. You know, hopefully, you know, we'll be able to bounce back, man. But, you know, things have been kind of tight over the, you know, the last couple of seasons and whatnot. So I think we'll be fine. We'll bounce back soon.
Okay. Who's the greatest Bulldog ever?
Ooh, that's a hard one. I don't want to say, man. Next question.
Okay, I didn't know if there was a guy that was the most favorable guy. I mean, I thought, and I might not be able to go back far enough, I know the one that I can remember is probably be Herschel Walker, but I didn't know if there was a guy that maybe is the most fabled guy when you're there around campus, maybe a statue or the most conversation or who everybody talks about.
Oh, you know, man, I only want to say.
Okay. I'll leave it open. Finally, have you ever, or let's say this, when was the last time, and maybe the answer is never to this, that you had a teammate that was actually taller than you? If people don't know, you can probably tell that Leonard's got some good size on him, but listed at 6'8" tall. When was the last time, does it go back to Pop Warner, that you had a teammate that was taller?
To be honest, as I'm thinking, I took that back to Georgia. Dennis Rowland. He played offensive tackle for the Cincinnati Bengals.
Okay.
Yeah, Dennis Rowland in college at Georgia. He was the only guy because he's like 6'9", 6'10", I'm like 6'8".
Very nice. Very nice. So there actually was one. Interesting. I would have thought maybe you'd have to go back to Little League. Maybe you were playing like fourth and fifth graders, and you were a fourth grader, and there was a fifth grader that had you by a half inch or something.
I've been the tallest throughout my whole elementary school years.
Very impressive. Hey, Leonard, congratulations on a great start to the season. I know you're headed into that fourth quarter, as Coach Haley likes to say it. Best of luck in San Diego, and hopefully we get a chance to talk to you again here real soon.
Okay, thank you, guys.
The Red Zone with Soren Petro will be right back here on KCChiefs.com. It is time for a new era with new vision and new hope. This is the 2010 Kansas City Chiefs, a team on the rise with the opening of the new and improved Arrowhead Stadium. It's got a new body, but still has the same soul. A team with electrifying young talent.
Charles on his feet, left side angling, cutback, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Jamal Charles.
A team focused, disciplined, and determined under the direction of head coach Todd Haley.
Just do your job, and we'll win this game. And the Chiefs put the hammer down.
Now is the perfect time to be part of the energy and excitement of one of the best atmospheres in the NFL.
And this kick is good. Ryan Suckup wins the game in overtime.
The party starts this August. Lock down your season tickets now by going to kcchiefs.com. Experience the new Arrowhead Stadium. New body, same soul.
Hey, Chiefs fans, I'm Josh Looney of kcchiefs.com.
And I am the internet. Great to be here, Josh.
We're here to tell you about all the new and exciting things going on at kcchiefs.com.
I usually don't endorse websites, but kcchiefs.com is legit.
I know. At kcchiefs.com, you can check out my daily blog, exclusive video content, see what's going on with the team, learn about the Chiefs cheerleaders, and much more.
Yeah, buddy.
That's not all. You can also interact with other fans in Chiefs 365. Chiefs 365 is the place for Chiefs fans to interact, give feedback, and be connected with everything Chiefs.
Fan feedback? That is awesome. But Josh, I really want to buy a jersey.
At kcchiefs.com, you can do that too. The Chiefs Pro Shop is the best place on the web. Buy all of your favorite Chiefs gear, gifts, and much more.
Whoa, system overload.
You want the Chiefs? Go to the Chiefs at kcchiefs.com.
Now, let's get back into the Red Zone with Soren Petro, exclusively on kcchiefs.com.
This is the Red Zone here at kcchiefs.com. Soren Petro with you on a Wednesday. Our thanks to Leonard Pope, Chiefs tight end, joining us in our last segment, talking about the game against the Broncos. Looking ahead to the game against the San Diego Chargers, a couple of nuggets on that Chiefs-Charger game coming up this weekend before we get out of here on the Red Zone. Number one, Kansas City leads the overall series 51-49-1. They're two games up on the Chargers, so San Diego could close to within a game but can't take the lead. The Chiefs hold the all-time advantage, 51-49-1 against the San Diego Chargers. Last win in San Diego for the Chiefs, September 30th of 2007, a 30-16 win over the San Diego Chargers. You remember Dwayne Bowe, kind of a coming-out party for him. Great catch and run, caught about a 7-9-yard slant, and beat the arm tackle, and then beat the rest of the Charger defense for a touchdown. Chiefs would go on out to, in fact, that might have been the game that made them 4-3. Not that early in the season, but they would go on to be 4-3 in that year before they would fall apart on the season and lose their last nine games. Things going better at that point. Larry Johnson still healthy. They won in San Diego last time, September of 2007, 30-16. Chiefs trying to get the win here for the first time in 3 years. The Chargers' cloak of invincibility gone. They lose 28-13 last weekend to the Oakland Raiders. It's the first loss in the month of December, and since December 31st of 2005. Now, it should be pointed out, a couple of losses in the month of January as the NFL schedule now spills into the following year. So December is not the end of the year, but you know, last year winning 11 in a row, winning the last four the year before. You know, they are four-time AFC West defending champions, and they do it by closing strong. They had won four in a row, first loss in December since 12-31 of 05. Home team has won 20 of 29 in the series, so that goes the way of the San Diego Chargers. 20-9 in the last 29 is the home team. Matt Castle now, we mentioned, no interceptions, no turnovers. He's now got 158 passes since his last interception, 158. That's a number that I know when it started getting pretty big last time, Matt Castle didn't want to talk about it, didn't want to jinx it, if you believe in that kind of thing. But Matt Castle doing a great job, as we said, of taking care of the football. 158 consecutive passes since he threw an interception. That's just an outstanding number. That's third best in the NFL right now. I love this statistic. Fourth best in the NFL is Brody Croyle at 112. That mark just sits there. And guys rise beyond it and then fall below it. Rise beyond it and fall below it. I'm sure there have been times in the NFL where Brody Croyle has the longest active streak. Right now, he's fourth best at 112. Matt Castle, third best at 158. In front of him, Aaron Rodgers, 177. Tom Brady, 228 straight passes since he's thrown an interception. Look, in no way would we say here after this great year that Matt Castle's having that he is the equal to a Tom Brady or even an Aaron Rodgers, but he's starting to be discussed about. A lot of the numbers and statistics put him right there with some of those big names. Maybe he's not there yet. He starts stringing together the years like he's putting together now, he will be. This could very well be a career year for Matt Castle, but he's playing at a level that all of his statistics, all of his numbers, have him being compared to some of the greats in the game. It shows you just how strong his season is, 158 straight without an INT for Matt Castle. Hopefully he takes care of the football. They'll need to. Going to have to win the turnover battle in San Diego, and they've done a great job in that department. Plus seven overall. Taking the football away three times from the Denver Broncos is big. Only giving it away nine times overall is fantastic on the year, and now beginning to take the football away. San Diego comes in with a minus five. If the Chiefs can win the turnover battle, they'll go a long way towards winning the game in San Diego. It'd be great. See the Raiders drop a game. If they could fall this week at Jacksonville, get them out of the way, get a win against San Diego, go up three full games in the division with only three to play, would be a great situation to be in. Let's hope the Chiefs can do it. They go to San Diego trying to win for the first time since 2007 in San Diego. That's going to do it for us here in the Red Zone. I want to thank our guest, Leonard Pope, tied in for the Kansas City Chiefs, Todd Villalobos from KFMB-TV in San Diego. I want to thank the guys who put together the Red Zone, Adam Pellegrino, Brad Young, Curtis Siebold. This is Seren Petro saying thank you very much for joining us here in the Red Zone.
You've been listening to the Red Zone with Seren Petro. Join us again next week for more discussion of your Kansas City Chiefs. This has been an exclusive presentation of KCChiefs.com.